skills. So I felt that since I didn't have any legal at that point representation, I wanted like Colombia to first to protect me, because these actors are Colombia student were are Colombia students and faculty, the ones who were waging this smear campaign against me online and calling for the administration to deport me. So this is the minimum that Colombia should have done, is to protect the students against these hostile actors. And that was not, I mean, I sent the email the morning of my arrest, I believe. And this was not the first email that we sent to Colombia and don't answer. Unfortunately, Colombia did not and does not until now treat all students as equal. What they care about is basically money and protecting their brand rather than going and listening to their students, protecting their students, and with their legitimate concerns, not to have any special treatment for the Palestinian or the students supporting Palestine on campus.
Wondering if Columbia
failed to
did
do,
Columbia
to do
University
that.
Support you in any way? I remember in the case of Rumeysa Öztürk, who is a Tufts Fulbright scholar and graduate student, also abducted by federal agents. Tufts wrote a statement of support. And then Suri Khan, the Dr. Suri Khan at Georgetown. Georgetown also spoke out. What about Columbia University on your behalf?
Columbia did not offer any sort of support when it comes to the legal case. And this is shameful on a university that claims to support international students and to support the right of freedom of speech. But this was not surprising. Colombia has capitulated to the Trump administration. But before then, they capitulated to the Zionist donors and politicians in this country. So to see them not offer this kind of support absolutely was not surprising, unfortunately.
Can you talk about your time in the Jena ICE jail? You were held for over 100 days there. Can you talk about the other prisoners, the conditions under which you were held? And then I want to get to the day your baby Dean was born without you there. But talk about the jail until that point.
So in jail, you spend 24/7 with the same people. So one of the things that we do is to just share stories from people from around the world. And every day it's just a more heartbreaking story than another, with people being snatched off the street or during their court hearings or ICE check-ins, where these people, like, they were trying to fix their documentation. They committed no crimes whatsoever. So you have this shock with everyone who's coming in around why they are there. I shared a dorm with over 70 men. And the stories are really heartbreaking, Amy, with people leaving their family outside without any kind of support, people who don't have their rights, don't know their rights, don't know if they have any rights, in fact. And with ICE, who basically don't tell anyone what their rights are, and just deport people. I've seen people who unknowingly signed their deportation documents because ICE agents tricked them into doing so, which is a blatant violation of any rule of law or due process. And just like to say that, like, the conditions inside were horrible. The food was horrible. The sleep quality equally bad, and just the atmosphere where you are inside, you don't know what's happening, and you're just expecting to follow orders and wait for an ICE officer to come and update you on your case. Unfortunately, a lot of these detainees don't have legal representations, and I was very privileged to have an amazing legal team fighting on my behalf, and that took us 3 months for me to be released. Despite me being a legal resident in the United States. So imagine for a lot of these individuals who don't have this kind of representation and who have, like, more complications in their documentation.
Mahmoud, can you talk about the day of Dean's birth, your firstborn son? How did you learn that Noor had given birth?
That day is what was absolutely one of the most difficult days that I had to endure in my life, being away from my wife and not having the opportunity to support her during this moment. And I was over the phone, so I would call every hour, just to see, like, if Noor is in labor yet or no, the moment of the delivery, I spent like over 3 hours over the phone, from 1:30 in the morning until 4:30, just like trying to support Noor as much as I could. Because I did not want to miss that moment at all. And what made it very difficult is because, like, this could have been easily avoided were the Trump administration to follow the law, or at least, like, to offer me furlough, like, to go and be with my family for a few hours. But they refused that because this administration thrives on cruelty and thrives on separation and family separation. So that was not surprising.
And can you talk about the moment when you met Dean for the first time? I mean, as you describe it now, you really were with Noor then. Of course, you were separate, but you were there over the phone. You heard his first cries. But talk about holding him for the first time. I remember, I mean, it was just weeks ago, why it was that your lawyers had to fight a battery of lawyers for so many hours for Noor and Dean for you to be able to have a contact visit. I mean, you have not been charged with a crime, but in the jail, is that right, where it was in Jena, Louisiana?
Yeah. As you said, I mean, it shouldn't take an army of lawyers to get a 1 hour contact visit to let me hold my son. The first time I saw my son was, in fact, through glass. So he was literally in front of me, but separated by glass. I couldn't hold him during the first time I saw him. Which made me very, very angry about, like, a 1 centimeter or one inch glass separating me from holding my son. And this is all by design, the cruelty of this administration, because their goal is to punish me as much as they could, and in any way that they find, because what they want is they want to break me. They want to make an example out of me. So the first time when we managed to get a court order, in fact, imagine getting a court order to force ICE to let me hold my son. And we had it for literally an hour, 7 in the morning. So even when they agreed to do that, or not agreed, even when they were forced to allow me to hold my son, they chose to make it at 7 in the morning in detention. So, I mean, the feeling, I don't think I can describe it. I was both very happy, but at the same time, very angry and sad that it took us all this effort to have this one hour in detention. And basically, I was really anxious. I was just looking at the clock when this hour would end. I just didn't want this hour to end. And that hour was the fastest hour in my life. Just like, you know, like went like this.
And so,
yeah, Amy,
you were released less than 2 weeks ago, and now you are living at home with your wife and your infant son. Do you feel safe?
I don't fully feel safe, to be honest, Amy. We all know the rhetoric that's currently going around in this country, the Islamophobia, the anti-Palestinian bigotry and racism, and this violence that was exported by Israel to this country. I'm being targeted by Israeli government affiliated groups here in the US who are very dangerous, who would do anything to silence Palestinians, because for them silencing it's much more easier than dealing with the argument, because they have no argument about what they are doing in Palestine, and this is why they want to shut down the conversation any way they can do, even if this would mean hurting or harming me and my family, and it's a huge concern. But it's a price that I need to accept for advocating for the rights of the Palestinian people, because once again, this is always a distraction from the genocide in Palestine, and these attempts to silence me are just one way for them to attack us and to cut. Just not to let the public know about what Israel is doing and how the U.S. is complicit in this genocide.
Mahmoud Khalil, you led a march from the steps of St. John the Divine up to Columbia University wearing a Palestinian flag as a kind of cape with 1,000 supporters there. And you were one of the leaders of the encampment at Columbia that led to so many protests and encampments around the country on university campuses. Many of the protesters were Jewish. Many of the supporters for you who would march when you were detained were Jewish. I was wondering, what did that level of Jewish support mean to you here in the United States?
First of all, just a correction. The student movement at Columbia doesn't have leaders. I believe all the students equally contribute to the movement, and it's being mobilized by a large number of students, hundreds of students at Columbia University. But going back to your question, Amy, I mean, Jewish students are are an integral part of the student movement, whether at Colombia or in the United States. And this is very, very important because these Jewish students, they show the world that what Israel is doing is not in their name, is not in the name of Jewish safety, which is very important. These also Jewish students are acting upon their values of protecting protecting the weak or supporting justice. So it's really, to us, it's very important. This shows that the Palestinian cause goes beyond Palestinians, Arabs, or Muslims. It's a universal cause for justice, for freedom, and for human rights.
And finally, Mahmoud, as you are free now here in New York, you still face deportation?
I do. Now I'm out on bail, which means that the court proceedings can continue while I am out. So I'm still facing deportation. However, a federal judge ruled that the Rubio determination on what Rubio did to me is likely unconstitutional, and that's why he ordered my release on bail. So I'm confident that we will prevail in court. That this administration attempts to silence us wouldn't succeed. And now that I will seek accountability, from this administration, from the individuals and actors who contributed to my arrest, and now exploring these options with my lawyer. Because in the first place, what I was protesting for accountability, to hold Colombia and the U.S. government accountable for their complicity in war crimes and genocide against the Palestinians, and I will continue to do so, because what happened to me shouldn't have happened in the first place. I shouldn't have been prosecuted simply for my freedom of speech, simply for speaking up for Palestinian rights, and those who have contributed to that in any way should be held accountable.
Mahmoud Khalil, thanks so much for joining us. Columbia University graduate, Palestinian student activist, detained by ICE March 8th and held for 104 days at the ICE jail in Jena, Louisiana. During that time, his wife, Dr. Noor Abdullah, gave birth to their first child, Dean. Mahmoud was released June 20th. You can see him coming to Newark Airport and the next day's event in front of St. John the Divine with 1,000 people greeting him at democracynow.org, as well as our interview with Mohsen Madawi, who also graduated from Columbia University after being jailed in Vermont for several weeks. You can go to democracynow.org. When we come back, we'll be joined by Congressmember Ro Khanna as the House continues to debate President Trump's budget bill. Stay with us.
Yesterday I saw you standing there with your hand against the pane, looking out the window at the rain. And I wanted to tell you all your tears were not in vain, but I guess we both knew.
Peaceable Kingdom by Patti Smith. Performing at Democracy Now's 20th anniversary next year, we celebrate our 30th. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. I'm Amy Goodman. We go right now to Capitol Hill. Republican leaders have, appear to have convinced enough far-right holdouts to win passage of President Trump's budget bill, the sweeping package of tax cuts for the wealthy, deep cuts to social programs, including Medicaid and SNAP food assistance, and massive massive amounts of new funding for immigration enforcement and detention. The Congressional Budget Office says the bill will add $3.3 trillion to the national debt over the next decade. The Kaiser Family Foundation estimates some 17 million people could lose health insurance over the next decade as well, if the bill is approved. For more, we go to Ro Khanna, Democratic congressmember from Silicon Valley, from California, vice chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus. Congressmember, thanks so much for joining us. To say the least, as we broadcast, this is a very tense moment on Capitol Hill and around the country. Tell us what's happening.
Unfortunately, it looks like the Republicans will cave to Donald Trump's wishes again. This bill is likely to pass in the next hour or so. It is unprecedented in that it takes literally from the working poor. It makes people in the country who are in the bottom 30% working hard to make pay their bills poorer, because it's stripping away health care from them, stripping away food assistance from them. And it is all in the name of giving tax breaks to the wealthiest. The top 60% in this country benefit. The top 20% in this country get 60% of the benefits.
So on the one hand, you have this massive cut for Medicaid. 17 million people, it's estimated up to, could lose their Medicaid. And you have this massive increase in ICE funding. With President Trump, as you were all dealing with this on Capitol Hill, goes to what he calls alligator Alcatraz to inaugurate the building of a new ICE jail, what the Florida governor called a one-stop shop, a jail of leading up to 5,000 beds on an airstrip so people can be first detained and then deported.
Well, you have not only the massive increase in funding on for border security without any consideration of human rights. And you just had Mr. Khalil on, which was a case of the violation of human rights. But it's also a violation of many Americans' rights. I mean, Americans now are afraid of who they can befriend or who they can love. They're afraid of giving a coworker who may not have the right status a loan or assistance. They're afraid of going out and protesting if in their groups they may have people who are immigrants. We are creating in this country control over people. And that's impacting not just the rights of immigrants. It's impacting our freedoms as Americans.
Notice the news organization is reporting that President Trump met with Republicans yesterday and told them, I've told you there are three things you can't cut, Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. And apparently one of the Congress members said, but you are cutting Medicaid. What is going on here? And this latest news we're getting as this debate goes forward, that he's saying he can fix things by executive order.
Well, he's hoping that he can, through rhetoric, just deceive people. The reality, as you pointed out, is 17 million people are going to be cut off health insurance. This cuts almost $1 trillion from Medicaid. It stops states from charging a provider tax, which helps them fund rural hospitals that the federal government reimburses. It caps the amount they can do that. Everyone knows that's going to hurt rural hospitals and healthcare services. It puts a huge amount of paperwork for people who want Medicaid. And we all know from the Arkansas experience that's going to mean less people on Medicaid. So it is making massive cuts, unprecedented cuts like we've not seen since 1965. And the president hopes he can just go out there and say that, well, it doesn't cut Medicaid. And they've delayed some of the cuts in the bill to not happen before the midterm elections. But our task is to get the facts out there to the American people that these are the most devastating cuts, all to finance tax breaks for the billionaires. The reality is 60% of the tax breaks in this bill go to people over $220,000. And Amy, one thing to understand, this is so much worse than either the previous George Bush tax cuts or the Trump tax cuts, because those tax cuts were skewed towards the wealthy. wealthy, but they didn't take away from the working class. This is making the working class worse off and enriching the richest in our society.
What do you say to Senator Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, who said this is not a good bill for Americans, but she got what she needed for the people of Alaska? What about these deals that are being cut, both for senators and for Congress members, House members?
Well, it really goes to how you view your role as a member of Congress or a senator. If I were to view my role as I only am going to vote for everything that would benefit Silicon Valley, well, I should be lined up probably the first person to support this bill, because the billionaires in my district are going to do very well. The trillion-dollar corporations are going to do very well. But my view is that I'm not there to just represent the corporations in my district. I'm right there to represent the working and middle class in my district, but I'm there to think about what's going to be good for America. And the reality is the central issue for America is we can't be a nation half prosperous and half in decline and in despair. And so I'm afraid that Lisa Murkowski views her role through parochial interests. And that's how they've gotten some of these holdout senators and some of these holdout members of Congress. But it is a betrayal of people, and it's why the trust in government is so low.
So some are saying the silver lining for Democrats is it could win them in midterm elections, but many are asking, what do the Democrats offer? You have here in New York the state assemblyman, Zohran Mamdani, who has defied all the odds, had 1% name recognition, has now won the Democratic primary against the stalwart Governor Andrew Cuomo. And the significance of what he represented as he talked about sustainability, free buses, child care, as he talked about what it means to afford to live in the United States, in our case, in New York City. What does he represent to the rest of the country, Congressmember Khanna, to your colleagues in the House?
He represents grassroots activism. He represents seeing people who have been unseen, who are struggling, who have economic discontent. He represents building a coalition around issues of affordability. And the Democratic Party would be wise to have a bold platform going into 2026. That means taxing the wealthy, taxing the billionaires in my district. It means child care, $10 a day. It means Medicare for all. It means a real plan to create good jobs in this country, especially when you have AI displacing entry-level jobs. It means 1,000 trade schools and free public college. We need to address the affordability crisis. We need to address the crisis of a lack of good-paying jobs in America. And I call it a new economic patriotism. But the point is that Democrats need a bold economic vision. That, to me, is the biggest lesson of Mamdani. And I think these people who are attacking Mamdani gratuitously are doing so because they fear a new generation that is more in touch with the economic struggles of people, that wants a bolder vision for the party. And frankly, they need to step aside to allow for a new generation.
And what do you say to President Trump, who has threatened to arrest and deport the U.S. citizen, Zohran Mamdani?
It's just so un-American. I mean, you know, the remarkable part of America is New York can produce Zohran Mamdani, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and Donald Trump. And as different as they are, we usually celebrate in this country the extraordinary multiracial democracy we are. And when Trump is threatened in any way, for him to lash out at people just undermines what this country stands for. And I was so disappointed. You know, I have to mention this. There was a colleague of mine who criticized Mamdani as uncivilized because he ate food with his hands. Now, of course, we eat pizza with our hands and hamburgers with our hands, but that reminded me of the British criticism of Gandhi and Indians and my grandfather, who was fought in India's independence movement, as being uncivilized because of the way they ate. You know, it was America that helped India defeat colonialism, and it's sad to see echoes of colonial rhetoric here in the halls of the United States
Congress. Member Ro Khanna, we thank you so much for being with us. Tune in to our July 4th special. I'm Amy Goodman.
If you're a regular listener of this show or other shows on CJSF, we'd love to hear from you. Tell us about what you like and why you like it, as well as ways we can improve our programming. To leave comments, please email cjsfprog@sfu.ca or call 778-782-4423. This information can also be found on our website at www.cjsf.ca.
Hey, are you okay? It's okay not to be okay. Kids Help Phone is available 24/7, so you don't have to deal with your feelings alone. You can text with a volunteer crisis responder or call a professional.